Darker Than Blue by Willis and Shantae of Positive Light Ministry. Now, Willis and Shantae are the hosts of Positive Perspective, which broadcasts live every Sunday at 5 o'clock p.m. right here at Skid Row Studios. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios, and I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Our call-in number is 1-800-893-9562. I'm delighted to have with us in the studio, Dewan Moses. He's the program manager for the Veterans Resource Corps at the Weingard Center for the Homeless, and also sitting in here with him, Ms. Teresa Thompson. Welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you, thank you.
And we also have sitting in the studio with us Ms. Mello, Don Garza, and Marilyn Irazari. Can I get it close?
Yeah, it's
close. Okay, let's start off with Dewan. Can you tell our listening audience a little about your background? And what is the Weingard Center for the Homeless?
Okay. Dewan Moses, Program Manager for the Veterans Resource Corps Program. I would say most of my experience is pretty much social service. I'm a sociology major. I've done everything from working with economically disadvantaged teens to youth offenders. Youth offenders, teen parents. Within the last 3-4 years, I've worked with the homeless population. And for the last 2-3 months, I've been working with the Veterans Resource Corps program.
Mm-hmm. This is your home? You grew up out here?
Born and raised in L.A. Mm-hmm. Born and raised in L.A. Went to Crenshaw High School.
Okay.
Woo-woo.
Crenshaw. Born and raised.
Can you tell our listening audience what is the Weingard Center for the Homeless? For those that don't know,
The Weingard Center for the Homeless is basically an organization that services the homeless population. We do housing, we do clinical services, employment services. We also service veterans as well, mm-hmm. amongst other things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then also, you brought in here Ms. Teresa Thompson. Can you tell us a little about your background?
My background has been in teaching mainly. I was in the Air Force for 4 years.
Okay, and
all of us who work with the Veterans Resource Corps are veterans. Mm-hmm. They figured that having veterans work with veterans would be more effective because we can relate to some of the issues that they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. So they hired all veterans to work with them. So we're like veterans benefit counselors. We counsel them about the services that are available to them, and then we help them navigate their way through those services to get what they need, mm-hmm. whether it's housing, employment. It might be something simple as ordering a DD-214 or getting their ID. Down here on Skid Row, we have many people that don't have their ID, mm-hmm. so we can help them get their ID. It's a variety of services that we offer, and being having a background in teaching has helped me to, I'm used to dealing with people and their issues. Of course, it was younger people, teenagers, and even the elementary school. But working with veterans, because I am a veteran, I have a heart for it. That's mm-hmm. I love helping them to get out of a situation, mm-hmm. to make their lives better. Because what I do for them, I will want somebody to do for me. Mm-hmm. So our services are very important mm-hmm. for the veterans. We're located in the libraries, about 10 libraries throughout Los Angeles. And many times the veterans will just happen to walk in and find us. Mm-hmm. They don't know we're there. They just walk in and maybe they're homeless. We've had veterans that just got off the bus that needed a place to stay. Or a veteran has been looking for a job for a while, and we've been able to help them in many ways. Okay. So the program is good for that.
Yes, I'm a veteran, too. As a matter of fact, out of my family of 7 males and 2 females, 6 of us served in the military.
Wow.
Two in the Air Force.
All right. They call it the Chair Force.
Yeah. Three in the Army, and I was in the Marines.
All right. Okay. Yeah.
Let's get back to talking a little bit more about what is a Veteran Resource Corps. Can you explain that exactly?
Okay.
You know, how that started, the goals, all of that.
Well, the goal was to basically figure out ways to educate veterans on the different services that they had available throughout the city. And so they figured that the libraries would be the best way to pretty much reach out to the veterans. A lot of them would gear towards the library based on the free internet or just trying to find different resources that was available. So we figured, okay, well, let's place some of the VRC members, which is what they're considered, in the libraries and see if we can outreach and connect with different veterans.
Mm-hmm.
From that, since the last two, three months I've been there, we've been pretty much trying to focus on the outreach piece, which mm-hmm. is how I met you with the fair. That's how that came into place.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I wanted to do was figure out ways to pretty much connect with veterans and doing these fairs to kind of bring them in to let them know about the VRC program and the services that we have available to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how that came about.
Okay. And one of the things we're going to do in our second half when we open it up for the roundtable, because Marilyn was discussing a veteran in downtown L.A. and how to access that. But we'll do that in the second half of our show when we come up to it. What I would do like now, before I get into an in-depth discussion of veteran resources and the homeless, I would like to play a short 4-minute clip called Homeless Voices, an interview that I did over the weekend.
Okay.
Hey, this is Melvin Ishmael Johnson with the Qumran Report. And I'm out here in the Lafayette Park area across from the library. And I'm going to do an interview. And who am I speaking with here?
Paul.
Paul, can you tell us a little about your background, your home, and how you got out to Los Angeles?
Well, I'm originally from the South Bronx in New York City. And once I lost all my parents and a lot of people in my family, I decided, like, I was on my own. I don't have children. I'm not married. So I said, hey, let me just do something different with my life. So I said, let me come out here. I had a cousin out here, and he helped me get on my feet, and even though he left. And once I got on my feet, and I've been here ever since for 20
mm-hmm.
years.
Mm-hmm. Now, how long have you been homeless out here?
Oh, I've been homeless for like almost 2 years now.
What do you think is the biggest challenge out here that a person has to face when you're homeless?
Safety.
Safety?
Yes, because I've never been hungry one day. Because there are so many kind people out here. When they see you're homeless, they will look out for you. Mm-hmm. A lot of kind people. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you don't see that until you are in that perspective or in that situation. Then you start seeing how many kind people are out here.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you see a lot of homeless people that come from all over the United States out here?
I've seen a lot of different ethnicities
mm-hmm.
who come out here. I've met people all the way from Africa who come out here and are homeless.
They're homeless. Do you find many people that live in Los Angeles that are homeless?
Oh, many. The majority.
Mm-hmm.
The majority. Right in this area, this mm-hmm. whole park mm-hmm. is almost all homeless people.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of them come here from Los Angeles. They grew up here in Los Angeles.
They grew up in here in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. A lot of them. And then you have a really kind of a nice, interesting mix of people mm-hmm. here.
How about a female? What's the biggest challenge for the females out here that find themselves homeless?
Avoiding to be abused.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the main challenges. Mm-hmm. And one last question. What do you think, what can the city do to improve the conditions of the homeless to provide more homes for people to live in?
Wow, that's an interesting question. I would think it's just about services. Mm-hmm. About services. People need more services and more people coming out to them.
Mm-hmm.
They're always waiting for people to come to them. They need the services to come out to the people. Mm-hmm. Be on the streets. Hey, oh, you're homeless? Let me help you. Let me look. I just information. Da, da, da. But they don't do that. We have to always search for them. Mm-hmm. They need to search for us.
Oh, okay. That's a good point. You mean more mobile units that can come out and
right.
really see
what's going on.
Okay, because most people, when they think of the homeless, they just think it's just the Skid Row area, but it's more than that.
It's more than that.
Yeah.
There's so many people out here that are so homeless. There's so many people out here, and they gotten to the point, like, because California is a warm weather state, mm-hmm. and it's gotten to the point where, like, homelessness has become a part of the lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of sad. Mm-hmm. It's kind of sad. People are like, look at this. You see what you see here?
Yeah.
Homelessness has become a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Because, and you can do it in California. You mm-hmm. can get, do it and get away with it in California.
Okay, then. Thank you very much. Tell us your name again.
Paul.
Okay, and then remember, Paul, you have an open invitation anytime you want to come on the radio show.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
Good.
Great interview. Yeah, if I get a chance, I'll make a copy of it for you. Okay, what about the concept of more mobile service to the homeless veterans? What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's excellent. I mean, that's pretty much what the VRC program is pretty much about. It's trying to connect with veterans. We focus a lot on outreach. That's mm-hmm. a main piece of us being able to connect with veterans and going into the next program year, because this is the pilot year for this program.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the next year, I'm looking to have a better connection with veterans and getting them connected to the organizations so we can make sure that the follow-up piece on their end mm-hmm. Is saw through,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so that's one of the main things that we're lacking right now is that when we make these connections to these different organizations, we're finding that the organization is not following through on their end. So mm-hmm. what I'm trying to do is trying to make a better connection with our VRC members, with something having them probably stationed at the organizations. So we have mm-hmm. one member at the library, one member doing outreach, and we connect to the different organizations that we refer these veterans to where that we can make sure that that piece is followed up and we're making sure that these veterans are getting serviced.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and can you explain again what VRC means?
The VRC is the Veterans Resource Corps.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Yeah. Now, a mobile unit, how would something like that? That's what I want to talk about in the second half of the show, because I think it's so important to develop some kind of system, exactly what you're talking about, where teams could go out into the community. Another thing that I noticed, I was talking to the same veteran about it, is a lot of veterans and homeless, especially in that Lafayette Park area, mm-hmm. they come out at night. It's a whole different situation after 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
See, and I think when they look at this mobile resources, I think they're going to have to look at that time period, like from 10, midnight, 1, because it's a whole different world from the daytime and the afternoon and all that kind of stuff. What are your thoughts on it, Therese?
Well, the mobile funding would be the biggest issue with that. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good idea because you can go out more, whereas now we're kind of limited mm-hmm. as to how far out we can go mm-hmm. because of the mobility problem.
Mm-hmm.
So it's getting funding, getting those who have the funds to take hold of that idea and see, we need and push for it. And then that would allow us to travel out more and mm-hmm. people would know, okay, this is a mobile unit for veterans. Mm-hmm. And they're more likely to come to it because, like you say, you know, people, the veterans may not go to where they need the services mm-hmm. because a lot of times you have people, I've met people that didn't even know they were veterans. They got out with honorable discharges, but because they didn't go to war, they didn't think they were veterans.
Mm.
They think that only those who served in Vietnam, those who went to Iraq or Afghanistan are veterans. And I've had to actually tell several of them, no, you're a veteran. I had a lady at the Compton stand down tell me, she said, I just found out a few years ago that I was a veteran. I didn't realize I was a veteran. And so having that mobile unit to go out, to educate people, let them know,
yeah.
they don't try to access the services because they don't think they're eligible. So mm-hmm. if you don't think you're a veteran, of course you're not going to think you're eligible for any services that the VA offers or any of the other organizations that work with veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not aware of them.
Yeah, and one thing, we've been pushing this for going on 2 or 3 years now in terms of the solutions to the homeless problem. And we always felt and I do, that the homeless problem, you have to look at it in two different steps. The first step, you have to make the homeless problem the homeless veteran problem. Mm-hmm. And then you get the federal government to devise a think tank to come up with a solution for it and then roll it out. Mm-hmm. I mention that because in terms of resources, the United States had an unlimited amount of resources.
They
do. See, I've always thought the problems have been the lack of creativity in writing proposals that are relevant to the situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're in a good situation now with where I was discussing with Don a little earlier about how they trying to the VA, how they trying to redo that to bring something new into existence, because mm-hmm. they know the old model is just so far behind the time. So this is the right time for new creative ideas like that. And in terms of resources, right now this is the time to tap into the of the government, you know, and reason I said that that first step should be the homeless veterans, and then the second step, I always felt that this is something that they could do right now to release some of the pressure that you got in Skid Row, mm-hmm. is get the interfaith community involved in getting a lot of this empty property rented or whatever, and begin to bring a lot of the people in Skid Row who problem is just mainly economics. Mm-hmm. Bring them out and reintegrate them back into the community, leaving mostly the recovery zone for a lot of the mentally ill veterans that's dealing with trauma and all like that, who are close to the resources. See, I think that's the model that I would like to see coming to existence. Now, what is the biggest challenge in getting veterans to utilize the service that's available to them? What do you find to be the biggest challenge?
I would probably think that just getting them to actually commit to receiving the services, that's probably the biggest thing. I mean, you have so many resources that's available to them. Mm-hmm. And I think more so it's the outcomes piece. Like when you was talking about the VA kind of reinventing themselves,
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of veterans have this negative view when mm-hmm. it comes to the VA.
Yeah.
You know, and so at this point, you know, you will pretty much have to reinvent or are more focused on the outcomes of all these veterans have been serviced and all these veterans have received different referrals or services that they needed. And that's one thing that kind of focusing on the VRC program and looking into the next program year is that we want to make sure that when it comes to the VRC and dealing with veterans, they see that we're actually connecting veterans or servicing veterans or getting them to need the needs that they need, basically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because what we're doing is taking that one big chunk of pie and putting it in smaller pieces. Mm-hmm. Because we can go directly to the organization. See, to give you an example, we had a client that came in, what was that, yesterday? No,
that was Friday.
Friday, a client came, and he was kind of bitter. Because he had been to the VA several days before, been there all day. He was homeless. He's living mm-hmm. on a little hill, isolated place. And the sheriffs had come and taken all his stuff. So he had to sleep in the cold. And he had been to several events, stand downs in different cities. He said, nobody is helping me. All they want is to count me as a number so that they can get their paycheck. And he really didn't expect us to help mm-hmm. him. Mm-hmm. And he needed housing. That was his main thing that he needed. He wouldn't even look me in the face. He talked to me with his the side of his face turned to me. And I said, okay, let me make some phone calls. So he left and said, well, I'm going to go use the computer. And he went and did that for a while. And my partner was like, well, where's the guy? I said, well, he left. I don't know if he's coming back because he went up the stairs. He may be back. I don't know. So he did come back, and I had made a phone call, and the first place I called, they didn't have any beds available. But he gave me a referral to the other place. He said, call and talk with so-and-so, and you probably can get a bed over there. I called over there. They had a bed. They said, send him over right now. Da-da-da-da. We're going to be leaving at 4:30 because most of the organization shut down at 4. Mm-hmm. So we were able to get him over there. I gave him the letter, his referral. I said, go now. He went over there. He actually got a bed, and he was so has so much gratitude that he walked all the way back to the library to say thank you, you know. Amazing. And that made me feel so good because here was the man that came in with a negative attitude. He's been through the VA. He's been over here to this organization, and nobody got him housing. Nobody cared enough to say, hey, I'm going to make sure you get a place to sleep tonight. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it actually happened from him happening to come in the library, which I don't believe in nothing just happening, that he was directed there by a divine source of God, guiding his steps towards us over where we were, and deciding to come over there and make that decision to talk to us and let us know what was going on. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, we were able to get him into housing, to have a bed to sleep in, while we're trying to get him into more permanent housing. Mm-hmm. So it was a step that he didn't expect. And so when it happened, it just caught him by surprise. And he came all the way back from Crocker Street, all the way back down to Central Library. And you know how far that is. Mm-hmm. He walked because he didn't have bus fare. So he walked all the way back just to say thank you. The same day after they gave him the bed, I said, where's your backpack? He said, oh, I just left it on the bed. And, you know, I just wanted to come back down here and tell you thank you. He said, I spent all that time at the VA and nothing happened. So the VRC is really helping them to really go directly to the organizations. That's what we're able to do. Mm-hmm. And they don't have to have this big fear. I think it's more relaxed. Mm-hmm. You know, you're in the library. Everybody's in the library. So, you know, it's a friendly place. You know, it seems you feel safe. Mm-hmm. You can come over there and talk to us. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, you can just pass on by. You don't have to sit and wait in a lobby or anything for somebody to come out. So I think all of that, you know, really helps our veterans because they can feel relaxed. They can just come there and sit down, and we can call this person or that
and
person
that's great.
And help them get the service they need.
And they can access so much information in the libraries with the computers and the internet, and if you got a library card and all of that. How about a special problems and concerns of female veterans? You run into a lot of that? You find it a big challenge?
They're just now starting. I went to a conference that we had several months ago for female veterans, and there wasn't a lot for female veterans, especially for those with children. Mm-hmm. That was a big gap. But it has improved, and they got more services because they realized that we were there, too. You know, we served, too. We raised our hand. We wore the uniform. So many of them may not identify or even know themselves. Like when the lady told me at the stand down, she said, I just found out I was a veteran. Oh. So, you know, you may have females that don't even realize they are veterans because they didn't go to war. They were right here stateside. They didn't do this or they didn't do that. For some reason, they don't understand that, yes, you're a veteran, too. Mm-hmm. You wore the uniform. You served 4 years. You got an honorable discharge. So it's getting the knowledge out to female veterans that there are benefits available to them also. Mm-hmm. Because the organization, what I've seen with organizational structure, has been geared towards the male veteran.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, let me ask you this, then. Do you have any kind of specialists within your organization when you're dealing with veterans that suffer from PTSD?
We have connections to those who have the mental health services, like D.D. Hirsch. Mm-hmm. We also have at the VA hospital, they have mental health services there that we hook them up with. Mm-hmm. So there are some services available to them.
But the outreach people that can get them and put them in touch with these services that you're talking about.
Do we have specialists?
Yeah, they within your organization? Or is there a need for that kind of special training? Do they get that kind of training in the social work field? Yeah, I know some great.
They're offering it. Mm-hmm. They are offering it because we took some classes, and have access to some classes now that are in a social field that's geared towards veterans, military personnel, those with PTSD, how to motivational interviewing, talking how to interact with veterans and stuff. So there are some classes.
Mm-hmm. And less labeling. So they we try to focus on getting them training. I mean, obviously they're not professionally trained in the sense to deal with them, but just as far as just to how to interact with them, like I said, less labeling. Mm-hmm. And dealing with the actual problem and trying to get them serviced.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful, then. I'll tell you what, because I see these guests over here, they're anxious to join into the discussion. Let's take a break for our community calendar, and then we'll come back and open it up for the roundtable.
This is the community calendar for upcoming events. Drama Stage Kunwan Veterans Community Workshop is being held Wednesdays from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. This session, we're dealing with creative writing. Participants are currently working on original 10 to 15 minute stage plays that focus on veterans. The location of the workshop is the Vortex, 2341 East Olympic Boulevard, Los Angeles, California, 90211. And this is at the corner of Olympic and Santa Fe. The contact information for the workshop is DramaStage1@yahoo.com, or please call 213-479-1764. Also, any veteran in need of health care services that include medical and psychiatric care, including substance abuse treatment for eligible veterans, please call 562-826-8000. And this is a 24-hour phone number. Once again, for health care services for veterans, you can call 562-826-8000, 24 hours. Upcoming guest on the Qumran Report, Monday, September the 29th, Dr. Cecil Chip Burry, most people know him. Also, Andy Griggs from Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace, and Jennifer Caldwell, who is a filmmaker. Monday, October the 6th, 2014, Ted Hayes, longtime activist and founder of Dome Village, also Leslie Jordan, will be on that show. Monday, October the 13th, 2014, John Malpied and Arietta, they're founders of LAPD, which is the Los Angeles Poverty Department Theater. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to DramaStage1@yahoo.com. Attention, Early and Anthony. And a reminder, the call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Earlene Anthony. Now, at this time, I'd like to open it up with a roundtable discussion. To join into our discussion is, and then we got Ms. Mello, got Don Garza, he's a veteran over there also. Bobby Buck probably going to chip in some comments. And then Marilyn, very interesting because she was talking about a veteran in the downtown area in which she's having a hard time connecting him with the services that's available to him. And let's start off right there. Let's talk about this mobile home model, homeless model, available to service, how to make it available to service organization and interfaith organizations, on kind of some suggestions on how something like that would look. What do you see, a bus, a mobile unit, or something like that? How could something like that be effective?
That's something, because I came in like mid-year of the program and just trying to think of different things of way of connecting with veterans. And that was something that I was thinking about possibly doing, but it's a funding issue. Mm-hmm. Then the liability, insurance, mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's just a big challenge. One thing I figured out in listening to Paul, like from your interview, mm-hmm. as he said, bringing the services to the veterans. And so that's one thing with the resource fairs that I've been having. And when they check in, every veteran that checks in, we have different columns of their interest need. whether it's employment, whether it's housing, whether it's benefits, education. And so what we do, we have them check off the different columns that they're interested in, and based on the higher need, we're going to have like tailored these little sub events at the libraries, to where we can call and connect with the veterans to bring those service providers to the library, and they can, you know, interact with them or get whatever services that they need. And so that's like kind of like, you know, my way of kind of countering the you know, the lack of funding to actually have those mobile vans or buses that pick the veterans up and take them to the organizations. We're looking to bring the organization down to the library of the different veterans that are looking to get service in those different areas.
And I think that's one thing that the activists, we got to start pushing the activists to push for that, to push for more funding for these organizations, because what's good for the veterans is good for the homeless down there as a whole. And we got to get the community to see that, because I've heard some negative feedback about putting veterans in front. You know, when Michelle Obama came, I think last month or something like that, a lot of negative feedback about why are you putting the veterans homeless in front of the other homeless? And it just makes sense. You can reach back to the and push on the conscience of the United States of America that it is a legitimate that you owe these veterans who have served the country. You owe them that. And I think that's in the whole would help out for the whole homeless situation in developing some models that's workable. Anybody want to pick up on that? Yes. Pick up on what we're talking about, mobile units, anything?
Well, I can tell you from my personal experience.
And this is Marilyn.
I'm Marilyn Irizarry, Puerto Rican from New York. Like Paul, from the South Bronx. I was made in the Bronx. So I have this one gentleman I've known for 9 years. I've been a homeless and a human rights activist for over 40 years. Started in Harlem, when the Vietnam vets were coming back to Harlem. And this man, I call him my brother, he's in his 70s, he's broken. So I have gone there and I bring him food, clothes, whatever he asks for. Like today I dropped some things off, he wants some deodorant, and I said, what do you want? So I found out what he wants. Now he has not been indoors that I know of for most of the last 9 years. The only time he went indoors was when he got sick and they took him to a hospital. When they released him from the hospital, he went back to the corner he's been living on for, we've determined, possibly the last 15 years, on the corner of Los Angeles and 3rd Street. And when I asked him, do you want to come with me? Can I take you someplace? Can I put you somewhere where you'll be, especially when it's raining? Get out of the rain. No, I'm not done here yet. That's his answer to me. So in his mind, he has got a duty to that corner. If you're going to deal with people who are not capable of making really great choices for themselves or even good choices, then you need to be prepared for that. You need people who are psychologically educated to be able to communicate with them in such a manner that they feel safe. He feels safe with me. I'm his sister. I've known him for all these years.
Now, this fits right in when you look at the whole Skid Row area. You know, one of the main issues that I see that they seem to have no answers for, close to no answer, is dealing with the mentally ill. You know, they just don't have a solution for it. They seem like they are afraid or whatever, and that seemed like this fit right in with there, because you do have a lot of veterans that's dealing with this kind of trauma situation. And the I guess the answer is, the question is, how do you develop when you have an individual that's far out, you know, from mainstream society? How do you develop tactics and techniques to help a person like that?
I've got decades
resources, because that's the goal, right? The goal for veterans is to get them to access the services that's available to them,
right? Now, I have decades of behavioral sciences behind me, so I speak to him absolutely respectfully. I never question him. Whatever he says, that's his reality. So he feels safe with me. So if you're going to send somebody out, they have to be trained. And exactly. Then as far as I understand, there's a financial issue here, but eventually there will not be a financial issue. And these mobile units have to be made in such a way that these people will feel safe to go into that unit if they want to take a shower, if they want to change clothes. Mm-hmm. Some of them have...
Well, let me ask you this question. Just say, for example, issues. That you had all of the financial resources available to you, and then you come across an individual like that. How do you get them to access the service? That's the question.
You have to be very well educated to be able to talk to somebody. And sometimes Lewis happens to be very lucid, mm-hmm. except for he has boundaries. Some of the people out there cannot have a conversation with you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so
they're incapable of
doing. I'm going to come back around to you. Yeah.
I feel that it's not a one answer. It's not a one size fit all. You have to have people who are trained to know people, not just have a degree, but to really read a person, because what's good for Joe may not be good for Michael. And if Michael is far off to the point where he can't even have a conversation with you, it's not his fault. You have to see where that triggered from. And it takes time. That's mm-hmm. why you need a village of people with the same mindset to really want to help people, mm-hmm. to really change that. It's not going to be overnight, but it can happen with the right people in tow.
Okay, now this mobile unit that we're trying to envision, this model mm-hmm. that we're talking about, would this be a type of unit that could come up on a homeless person, a homeless veteran, and inside of that unit they would have computers and forms and all that kind of stuff where they could access that information right there? Would that be practical for a unit like that?
Are you talking about those who are providing the services, or so the veterans can come in and access information?
Yeah, I'm talking about the service organization, like your organization. If they had the funds to get these mobile units that we're talking about, mm-hmm. I'm trying to visualize how they would be set up. Yeah, would it be, would they have all of the computers and the forms and the social workers right there? If we can't get a veteran to leave that spot and come to a facility, how can we deal with it right there to get that process rolling?
Well, I think that would be awesome. I mean, especially like what we're talking about with the veterans seeing more of the outcome, mm-hmm. and, you know, seeing that the services are available directly to them. And a lot of them don't want to feel like they have to, even with the VRC team, like with feeling like they're just handed off to an organization. They actually want to feel like, okay, well, we've got service. When we come to the VRC members, we receive services that we're looking to receive, rather than, okay, we're going to walk you along and hand you off to another service provider that can provide you services. So if you had those organizations that were mobile, that able to provide that direct service at that point in time when they come in contact with that veteran, that'd be mm-hmm. ideal.
Mm-hmm. One more question on that. Do you think that we need some kind of network of the service providers, the big service providers that's down in the Skid Row area, to network and come up and utilize the system as a whole, sort of like a central clearinghouse mobile unit that can be connected to, say, the Wine Guard, the Midnight Mission, the LA Mission, et cetera, like that?
Well, you can have a network. Like right now, we attend once a month. We go to a Veterans Collaborative, mm-hmm. and that's where organizations from all over the city come together. They're all working to help veterans. And, you know, I want to bring up that it's only been recently that all this attention has been given to veterans,
That's
you know.
Right.
And our Vietnam veterans were forgotten about. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't even think about them. And so a lot of them have been disengaged from the process for so long that they have no desire to be engaged. Mm-hmm. So it's been a long time coming, all of this attention on veterans now. There's a lot of money flowing. A lot of everybody is getting grants in, and they want to be a part of the pie. But I hope in the process of all this money flowing that they don't forget about, it's about that veteran, you know. Because not about just getting some numbers, but making sure that person gets a place to stay, making sure that person gets health care, making sure, you know, another story, because I've been with them since the beginning in when we started in December. And I had a veteran that came. He was living outside, honorable discharge, served his full term in the service. And he came to us back in, I think, January. And so while he was sitting there talking to me, he was bundled up in coats and gloves and a hat. And he kept dabbing at his eye. He had on some dark glasses and he kept dabbing at his eye. Well, one of the things I had learned is don't ignore when you have a client before you, don't ignore what's going on with him physically. And so he kept dabbing at that eye. I said, what's up with your eye? And so he said, I don't know. It leaks, you know, and I said, well, he said, I think it might be from when I worked in with radiation when I was in the service. I said, you know what? Okay, I'm sending you to the VA. Go over to the VA clinic on Temple Street, and you tell them you're homeless and you need health care for your eye. And then when you do that, we're going to see about getting you to file a claim. Because if that's true, that you worked with radiation and you got other men that you work with that are having the same problem, guess what? You got to get help. Mm-hmm. So he went over to the VA. They got him in housing the next day. And I didn't see him for about 3 months, 3 or 4 months. And when he came back, I didn't recognize him. Mm-hmm. He didn't have on all the layers. You know, the burdens had been lifted off. The jackets had come off. And he walked in. He said, you remember me? I go, oh, yeah. Where you been? What happened to you? Well, they had given him 3 laser surgeries for his eye. And had scheduled him for another one. They had put him in housing. They were taking him to Long Beach to get training with the blind, for the blind, or something that they have at the VA there. But it just made a difference. And then I saw him just last week when we were over at the Gateway Apartments. And I thought that was him from behind. So I walked up and I was talking to one of the other members and I kind of like got in front to look at him. I said, looks like him. I'm not sure. Then he's like, hey, Teresa, how you doing? I go, it is you. And he's getting ready to move in more permanent housing now. You know, and his whole demeanor changed because he had gotten the help that he needed. And that's what we don't want to forget, is that it's about the individual veteran, not about just the funding. Because as the guy who came to me on Friday was like, we're just about numbers to them. They're just trying to get their money. They're trying to keep their numbers up so they can get their paycheck. They don't care about me. They don't care about us. You know, so we want to make sure that the veterans aren't forgotten about, that it's that person. There's a person behind all, you know, the baggage.
All those layers.
All those layers. There's a person there that sincerely needs to know that I care about you. I'm concerned about you. I want the best for you. And when they feel that, when they see that, they do come back and tell you. He came back to tell me thank you. You know, it was 3 months later, but he came back to tell me thank you. And he came back to let me know. He said, can I now get the help for putting in my claim? So I gave him another referral. I said, okay, you're going to go talk with Tiffany, and she's going to help you with your claim. And so that's what he's working on now. So his attitude has changed because he saw that he wasn't forgotten about. You know, that we remembered him, that he was there and we cared about him. So that's what's important, is that we make sure, whether we're in a mobile unit, whether they have to come to us, that we have people connected to from any organization, that they're really concerned about the person and not just about getting a paycheck.
Okay. Don, I know you want to say something over there.
Well, I just want to thank you for the efforts that you're doing to help the veterans on the street. I know there's a lot of different eras that are forgotten. I know we still have World War II veterans still alive to this day. We have Korean vets that a lot of times are still not mentioned. That's the forgotten war. Vietnam veterans, in my opinion, are not forgotten. That's the only veteran we ever hear about. As far as when it comes to the street, and as far as the cliches with post-traumatic stress disorder, the veteran of Desert Storm veterans seem to be the ones that seem to be forgotten a lot. Nobody wants to mention Desert Storm veterans. There was actual combat that actually happened on the ground, you know.
That's right.
And a lot of these guys at my age now, I'm getting word that they are killing themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The report is that 22 veterans a day from the DOD, that is that 22 veterans a day are committing suicide.
And it's interesting to me that I think it had to do with the fact when they came home, they really couldn't get a lot of help because a lot of the counselors at the VA and a lot of the counselors at, and a lot of people were front or Vietnam vets, and they already had their issues. So, but I think after once 2003 hit, and then things started to really change, and now we've got OEF, OIF vets, and counseling. Mm-hmm. I actually got counseling through the Victory Program through the mm-hmm. county because I won't go to the VA because of the bad experiences I had with Vietnam vet counselors telling me, well, y'all didn't see nothing, and I was in the jungle for 6 months, and I turned into a raisin, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, he's like, get out of my office, y'all, and, you know. So it took 22 years before me to get some counseling that I really needed to. Now I got to tell you something. Just that little bit of counseling has helped me so much in just my later life. I have a better quality of life. I can actually say I don't care if anybody dismisses my service being a Desert Storm veteran. Mm-hmm. I really don't care anymore. So I can deal with those issues. But there's a lot of veterans that can't deal with those issues. And there's a certain type of shame that comes along with, well, you didn't do as much as the other person. It has to do with survivor's guilt. It has to do with all the attributes of post-traumatic stress disorder and anxiety disorder. You asked the question about the mobile units. And one of the most important things when dealing with, because I lived in Skid Row for 15 years, and you build and you understand, and like somebody was, you know, no offense, but you have to listen to the people. They might be talking some weird way, but you have to overlook that, like this young lady was saying over here, because they are telling you something. They are saying something. Mm-hmm. And so it might take time. One of the things I learned was that you have to do things on their terms, not on your terms, and not in your time limit, not in their time limit, because things are always pushed down people's throat, especially military veterans, where everything was, when you were in the military, you could cross their boundaries, but they couldn't cross those boundaries. But your boundaries could be crossed every second, the whole time you were in there. So I understand, you understand those things. And yeah, mm-hmm. I was a Marine, so I could understand those issues a lot very well. The other issue has mm-hmm. to do with, I think, some of the questions you were asking. And a lot of people don't like to bring these things up. Civilian counselors really cannot, in my opinion, if they're not trained enough, they cannot really deal with the mm-hmm. issues of combat veterans. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you have somebody telling you, I think about killing myself every morning when I get up. The first thing that civilian counselor is going to do is think, well, that person's a danger to themselves. We need to tie them down, you know, lock them away somewhere. But when you get a counselor that has been in actual combat and you're able to discuss what it's like to feel on the battlefield, the denial that people are actually shooting at you and you didn't realize, wait a minute, they are shooting at me. Oh, my gosh, that was, yeah, recon came, wait. Oh, they were shooting at me. Recon just came to protect me. I thought, you know. And it goes on and on and on. But the issues of with the PTSD, the post-traumatic stress disorder, those, it's very scary to a lot of people. They cannot deal with the actual how you feel when you're in combat. Mm-hmm. And then having to deal with how you feel afterwards. And there's a lot of, I'm over 40 now, so I had to deal with a lot of this on my own, and I finally made it. And I think a lot of it has to do with ambivalence.
Okay. A couple of quick things what you just said about, because I think it's two other segments of veterans that we must begin to look at and look at their situation. Veterans that's in prison, see, we got to develop programs for the vets that's in prison, too, because most of the majority of the vets in prison is dealing with this kind of trauma also. In a lot of cases, their criminal activity is tied into that. The next one is the banished veterans, in which a lot of people don't even know about. Now, these are honorably discharged veterans who don't have their American citizenship. They come back, they get a felony, and they get deported. So you got a group that's right across the border, you know, called the banished veterans. A whole group of them. They've organized themselves and all that kind of stuff like that. So I think we must look at all veterans, especially those who have honorably served their country, right? And these particular banished veterans One thing that happened about 2 weeks ago, I was telling Don about it, is that the military have just decided that they're going to relook at all of these discharges that was less than honorable. And they were going to relook at them in relationship to post-traumatic stress and all like that. And now they're giving all of these veterans a chance to refile.
Right.
Which means benefits and stuff will be coming their way. And I hope this will open the gate to look at these veterans who grew up over here in the United States, served the country, just didn't have the American citizenship, and then they catch a felony, and then they kick them out of the country and stuff like that. That organization is called the Vanish Veterans. You can pull them up. Now, we're winding down. Let's take just about 30 seconds, give some of your contact information. If you have a quick closing comments, we got less than 3 minutes. So to let our audience know how to contact you. Let's start with Teresa.
Well, I'm at the Los Angeles Central Library, and we're on lower level 3, right across from the Computer Center. And our number there is 213-598-4046. And it's two of us there, so if one isn't there, the other one is.
Mm-hmm.
Dewan Moses, my contact information is 213-925-4039, and that's my work cell. And also, I just want you, everyone to know that the Veterans Resource Corps program is a stipend program. You know, so the hours and the commitment that these VRC members are making, It's not to get rich. You know, they have to commit 1,700 hours, and they only paid a certain living allowance per year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the dedication and love that they have, it's strictly, you know, for the people that the veterans that they want to service and get help for. You know, so when Teresa is going above and beyond, it's because she wants to.
Okay, thank you.
Well, no. I just wanted to clarify something when I said about the behavioral sciences. It's only because I have been doing this for so long, and I've been an advocate for over 40 years. Mm-hmm. So it's heart to heart, soul to soul when I do this.
Okay.
And I am a minister, and I do it by my faith.
What is your contact information for those that want to contact you?
I am Marilyn Irizarry, and you can reach me at MGIRIZ, as in zebra, ARRY, 18@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. Don, for those that contact information.
I'm Don Garza. You can reach me at the Downtown Film Festival in Los Angeles at don@dffla.com if you want to reach me by Gmail. And that's basically I'm doing that for now for the board of directors for that film festival.
Okay. Bobby, give us your link real quick. We 20-some seconds left.
All right. Yeah, just reach me at bobbybuck.com. And also you can call me at 213-293-7983. Come on, get on the board to this positive movement.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Mel.
And I'm Mello Desire, filmmaker for inner city youths and a homeless and the incarcerated. I can be reached at 718-510-4803. Have mm-hmm. a casting at the convention center Saturday, October 11th. Come on out.
All right. And Bobby forgot to mention that he got a show over here every Friday at 7 o'clock. Okay. Thank you very much. I'd like to extend a special thanks to all of my guests here. Please listen to past shows of the Qumran Report by Googling in Qumran Report. I just want to mention real quick, and I hope I got a minute for that, is we have our Full Scope Veteran Program. I got some flyers for that where we're training veterans for jobs in the theater, costume, lighting, sounds, also for jobs on the movie sets, and also we would be creating a segment on this show called All Vet Zones, where once a month we're going to have 20 minutes where we deal with nothing but resources for veterans, and I hope I can get some rotating hosts for that from your organization and a different veteran organization to handle that. Okay, thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report, and from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, may the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. I leave you with the song that opened the show, Darker Than Blue by Willis and Shante.
And